This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. And let me do
top
something.
Top of the morning.
Top of the morning to you, darling.
It's a gorgeous day.
It is. It's beautiful. And let me look into the camera here, and I want to give a wink.
Who's that to?
That's to Maureen Boyce, who said she was sure that I winked at her the other week. So there you are, Maureen. Good.
Two winks.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I
are... The fan club is going to be lining up outside the windows one of these days. You know that. Keep that
Charlie
up.
And I were just killing ourselves laughing because I was telling her about what's coming up in the weekend for me. I've got a wonderful weekend planned. I'm going to be driving to London, Ontario, my hometown, visiting with my oldest sister, Francie.
The tap dancer.
The tap dancer. And then go to a public school reunion. Crumlin Public School.
Okay, public school reunion. Who has any contact with public school at our age, number one? And number two, in Crumlin?
Yeah, like just Crumlin? Outside of London, Ontario.
It doesn't
the
sound like a very nice
is,
place.
I'm sure that I'm going to bump into Betty Rawlings, who, when I was a young kid, you know, I don't know, 8 or 9, I was singing in the choir of the Anglican church in Crumlin, and the bishop was coming, and I was given a song to sing, solo.
Like a solo.
A solo, yeah.
You were that good.
Trees. I think I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. And Betty was playing the organ, and when the bishop arrived, she got real nervous, and the tempo went from we finished the song in about 30 seconds, and I looked down and saw the bishop kind of smile, you know? So I'm going to be reliving all those wonderful moments. Anyway, it's going to be great.
Very fun.
Yeah.
Not to mention very silly, but get to work here, my friend. Do your job.
Yes.
Stop telling stories about your grade school days. Like, that's incredible. I was just blown away by this.
Okay. Intro on you. Want to reach Charlie? I'd like to reach Charlie. 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, it's toll-free. 1-866-740-4740. And remember our little mantra, please call early, call often. One question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, let Duncan, our operator, know. And just before you get to the airwaves, you're going to get that. The wings,
nice.
The garden wings.
The garden wings, all right. So for those of you that aren't busy in your own gardens, there's some stuff going on today, today in a couple of places. The Scarborough Garden and Hort Society is hosting a flower, fruit, and vegetable show. Mm-hmm. It includes a tea room. It's happening at the Scarborough Village Rec Center, 3600 Kingston Road and Markham Road. There's door prizes and more. Free admission. 2 to 4 p.m. today. And again today, the Innisfil Garden Club hosting a flower show and tea at the Churchill Courthouse, which is at 6322 Yonge Street. That's from noon to 1:30. It is a $7 admission fee to enjoy the flower show and the tea and all the goodies.
Yeah.
Monday, that'd be day after tomorrow, Monday. The Blenheim Hort Society, they're a pretty busy Hort Society, those Blenheim people. They are hosting a historical look of the Commonwealth War graves in our foreign military cemeteries.
Oh, wow.
And the origins of the plantings and the care and the maintenance provided.
That sounds
currently
fascinating.
It really actually does. Yeah. And it's very consistent. I'm teaching a course right now. It's called Historical and Contemporary Garden and Landscape Maintenance. Uh-huh. So it's very much on that tune of this idea of planting things, maintaining them over the years, maintaining that vision that was originally part of the design. As plants age and need to be cared for or replaced, do we always replace with exactly what was in there originally, or do we change it up and make it a little more modern? So it's all sort of super interesting. The Dieppe Gardens will be one of the features. It's apparently a very poignant presentation. 7:30 this Monday. at 59 Ellen Street in Blenheim, which is right behind the library, the Trinity Anglican Church, lower meeting room. Refreshments are provided.
Blenheim is toward the Chatham area.
Correct.
Right, yeah. Yes. Well, I worked in, as my first radio station down in Chatham.
When you were 14.
And, yeah. thank you. No wonder I feel so old.
You are such a puppy. I can just see you. I just see you wet behind the ears, sparkles in your eyes, singing a solo for the choir. Like, you are too much.
Unbelievable. Okay, are we all done those little announcements? Or?
Well, other than to remind everybody, I have a website, charliedobbin.com.
Yep.
So what I'm doing, what's going on, what's happening, check me out.
And I'm one of the pictures on that website, I do
believe. You are. You are. Well, you're featured prominently.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, we got to take a break now. Duncan's got a number of little buttons to push in there. Then we'll hear from some of our very fine sponsors and shall return. You are listening to The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Are we all set to roll along?
Let's do it.
All righty.
Thank you, Frank.
Out there in West Lorne is Sharon. Good morning, Sharon. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie.
Welcome back to the show.
Well, yes. Welcome back to you, too, and to Frank and that, too. I'm glad you're feeling better, Frank.
Oh, I feel He's terrific. I
feeling
really do.
And looking a lot better.
Well, that's good. He's up to his old
trouble.
Self again.
You know it.
I was kind of shocked your new answering service answered and whatever and that, too. He didn't know where West Lorne was.
That's Duncan. Yeah. He'll figure you out. Don't worry.
I directed him. I said it was about 45 kilometers from London.
So there you
and he said, oh, he never heard of it before. But anyway, he'll know me.
He's blushing. He's so ashamed that he didn't know.
Oh, is he? Well, that's all right. That's all right. I was expecting Sebastian.
I know. Sebastian moved on.
Yep. Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh,
yep. So Duncan is our new operator.
What I'm calling about is dividing hostas at this time of the year.
Perfect.
Can I divide them now and replant them and then someplace else?
For sure. Perfect timing. Because remember when we're going to dig, we're going to divide, we're going to replant anything, shrubs, trees, hostas, perennials in general. We try to do it and allow there to be approximately a six-week window post-division and transplanting prior to the first big hard frost.
Oh, I see.
Because the soil is nice and warm. The roots are going to take right off as soon as you get them in the ground. And giving them that six, 8 weeks in the ground, there will be root growth. There will be a certain amount of establishment before winter hits. And that's exactly what you want.
Okay. And the same with, I've got a hibiscus of that, too, that is just, it's huge. And then I found in the spring, there was a little, it must have been a seed pod or something that transferred over or blew over into the garden sort of right beside it. It's about 4 or 5 feet from the original big hibiscus. Mm-hmm. And it's coming, and I thought it was a weed, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to leave it. And it's starting, it's about, maybe two and a half feet high now, and it's starting to come out and bloom now, too. So I want to transplant it someplace.
Yeah, because it's in a spot you didn't plant it, so you want to put it somewhere better.
That's right.
A bit of a challenge, because if you transplant it now, which is fine, you definitely can, you will probably limit the beauty of the flower that would have formed and
showcased. Well, that's what I figured. I thought maybe I'd leave it till next year and then transplant it someplace else. But
the time to transplant it to still maximize the flowering would be in the spring.
Okay.
Late spring. Okay. Keeping in mind, this is one of the last plants to emerge, right? We don't see them in the spring right away.
No.
A little stake in the ground where it is so you'll know where it is. And then as soon as it starts to emerge a tiny bit, transplant it. So that might be March, it might be April, might be May. Just depends on the weather.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Fine. Thank you very much. And I think you're going to have a lovely weekend in London because it's supposed to be nice all from now till Thursday.
That's
Frank.
Great.
Great.
Thank you. I hadn't checked the forecast, so thanks for that, Sharon.
Okay. I'm a weather watcher, too.
Oh, good stuff.
Most gardeners are. Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you for joining
us. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
And look, here's another old friend.
You know, I looked up at the monitor and saw John, Mississauga.
You know
it. The subject matter is fruit. It's got to be our old friend, John from Mississauga.
No
question. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, John.
Like the lady said before, Frank, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hope you are feeling better, my friend. I talked to Robbie at the CNE to send my regards. I don't know. I've been trying to call, but always find the line busy. So Frank, glad to that you back on. You're like the lady said, like yourself.
Yes, you got it.
Back on track.
Thank you so very much.
Yes, Charlie. Now, to be honest with you, I have so many apples. And I tinned, and I and the same with the pears.
Poor you.
But they stayed small. Why?
Oh, well, maybe because you didn't thin enough.
I didn't thin enough.
Yeah, if they're small, that's usually just because remember, a tree can only produce so much growth, so much carbohydrate, you know, sugar, all that flavor.
Mm.
So when we have too much fruit, we end up with large quantity but low quality. We have smaller fruit and typically not as tasty. So yeah, thinning can be a challenge. If it's a really good year for pollination, you could be thinning, you know, 90% out of the plant, which is an awful lot, I agree.
I was going to say, and one tree, which unfortunately is not dwarf, and I think I told you a couple years ago, I had 27 boxes from it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they were fine. But like I said, I've been thinning and and it's maybe around 3 inches or, you know, so that's the reason, you know, I mean, how much you thin though?
Well, that's always a hard thing is you don't know. But what you do is you want to do it as early in the spring as you can. So as soon as you start to see those little ball-bearing sized fruits starting to form, you're out there. You know, obviously, it might take hours to do it. So you just go out when you can and just remove. You've got those clusters of 5 or 6 apples on a little cluster, remove four of them right away. Just leave 2 in that spot. So just know in your heart of hearts, it's like a kind of a 2/3.
That's going to guarantee bigger fruit.
Bigger and better fruit.
Yeah, but I tell you, Frank, it breaks my heart every time. For example, like Charlie is saying, if I have 6 of them and I take 4, I say, oh my God, you know, why did I take 4?
Oh, well, you'll be happy for the ultimate fruit.
So
again, nice talking to you. Charlie and Frank, and thanks for the advice. And Frank, enjoy your weekend, buddy.
Oh, thank you very much, John.
My granddaughter is there, so you know, she's in Western,
Well, there you go.
Oh, nice.
So, hey.
Thanks again. Thanks
super.
Again.
Thanks for calling.
Take care, John. Thank you for joining us here on a Saturday morning where I'm looking at the clock and, we better move along here. We have to take a little bit of a commercial break here from some of our fine sponsors and shall return, of course, Charlie Dobbin right here in studio as we broadcast live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village on a gorgeous Saturday.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, my good friend Charlie.
Franklin.
there we go, Franklin. Out to Oshawa. There's John on the line. Hi, John. Hello, John.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Well, I have about 5 climbing hydrangeas in the front of my house. Mm-hmm. They're on a trellis. Mm-hmm. What do I do to make them flower?
Oh, they don't flower?
No, they grow like a weed.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Somebody suggested Epsom salt.
Epsom salts are used as a fertilizer, no question. So it wouldn't be a bad thing to use Epsom salts. I would double check. Do you have access to the internet?
No, I'm sorry. I'm from the old school. Okay. I don't know anything about computers.
All right. So you keep listening, and I'm going to give you some information on how much to use. And, of course, it's the kind of thing you would use in the spring. The other thing is, so they're growing on a trellis, so like a flat trellis against a fence.
No, against the wall of the house.
I guess. Okay. And there's 5 of them. That's a lot. So how long ago did you plant them?
Oh, my gosh. Some of them have been on 5 years or more.
Whoa. Nice.
Have they ever flowered before or no?
No.
Oh.
And what direction of this does that face? Do you know that part of the house?
Pardon?
What direction does the house face?
They face the north.
Okay. Still should flower, though. They are a plant, a climbing vine, that will flower on northern-facing exposures. Mm-hmm. The house I just left in Richmond Hill, back face north, same as you. I put one in a number of years ago, probably 6 or 7 years ago. And I spent every spring trimming that plant to try and keep it as flat to the wall as I possibly could, because this is a vigorous plant. Once it gets going, it's going to encapsulate
and
your house.
Got five of them going.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I would think that two things. One is I will give you an idea of the Epsom salt quantity to use next spring. The other thing I would do next spring is get out your pruners on a nice dry day and do some pruning to try and keep that plant as flat, like the growth you want, the pattern of the growth to go flat and or parallel to the wall or the trellis. Mm-hmm. Anything that's growing out into the garden or out, you know, into the yard, I would be removing that from where it's, you know, growing
from. And
that'll
promote flowers, will it?
It will, because right now probably there's such a mass of foliage. There's a whole bunch of plant, like it's all shading itself. Yeah. If it gets too dense and too thick, you've just got all that shade. You've got very little air circulation, and all your growing tips are where the flowers are going to form. And they do form in late spring. So early spring, you're out there doing some real solid pruning, and you can, you know, go to town, take away.
Somebody suggested a slow growing fertilizer. But don't do it now. They suggested in the spring.
That's right. Any fertilizing you're going to do on those plants, you'll do in the spring. I would be inclined to feed them, of course. There's no question all plants need to be fed in the spring. A slow release flowering plant fertilizer is a good choice, or the Epsom salts has potential. It's more a question of the quality of your soil.
What do you suggest?
If you haven't done any fertilizing, I probably would use just an all-purpose flowering plant.
Now, this time of year?
No, you'll do it in the spring.
Okay.
But I'll check the Epsom salt website and see what they say about hydrangeas, if you like. And you keep listening, and I'll report back on that.
Have a piece of paper and pencil handy, because you might be writing stuff down, okay?
Thanks, John. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All righty. Have a great day, and thank you for joining us from Oshawa.
Mm-hmm.
Off to Mississauga. Let's see. How can we mumble along to Mississauga?
Mince along.
No, I don't think so. Teresa, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to talk about my orchid.
Mm-hmm.
I have a beautiful white orchid, and it's huge flowers. They span about almost 5 inches across.
Nice.
But they get these long, what are they called, a root?
Yes.
And the goals are, and they're pretty ugly. They look like little snakes. Can I cut them off?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to yell, but we both did it at the same time.
What can I do?
Your call is not unfamiliar to us. Yeah. We have heard this question before, because they do look a little, it's like my son is afraid of spider plants. He thinks they're like going to bite him in the middle of the night because they look, remind him of spiders. Do not go down that slippery slope of those roots looking like snakes. They are not snakes. They're roots. The plant needs them. It's the way they have evolved over the,
from the air,
millions
right?
of years. Exactly. This is the way they grow. They are aerial roots, so they grow into the air.
Okay.
When they're happy and healthy, they have a little green, shiny tip and very, very, you know, almost glows.
They do, yes.
And then they get like a silver, almost a skin along the root going back to the plant. And that you want that. Don't prune them off. Just remember to turn the plant in the window or wherever you've got it, 90 degrees.
I do. So they
good.
Go all around. Yeah,
that's right. And yeah, just try to concentrate on the flower. Don't look at the roots.
You know, we have provided you, Teresa, with a wonderful platform to do some bragging, which you were just so happy to do about that lovely orchid of yours.
That's right.
That's terrific.
I also want to mention there's so many monarch butterflies in our backyard.
Yeah,
good.
It's been a good
one
year.
One bush, I counted 17 of them. I wish I knew the name of the bush. It turns pink and then it goes rusty. It's like an umbrella type of bush. And they just love it.
Oh.
And right next to it, there's my butterfly bush, and they don't even touch it.
Oh, interesting. So the flowers are pink now on the one that they're going
to? No, they're beautiful, nice pink, dark pink. Hmm.
Dark pink flowers.
I can get the name and email it to you.
Oh,
please.
That'd be great.
Butterflies.
Yeah.
Sure, definitely. I'm in the middle of designing a garden, trust me. A big garden. I need some ideas.
Okay.
So dark pink flowers now. I just can't think what that is.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you can get the name. Do you want me to give you my email address?
CharlieDobbin.com?
No, it's C.Dobbin. So my initial... If you want to use the MZ Media, which is my radio station email, my first initial C for Charlie, dot or period, C dot Dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N. BBIN.
At mzmedia.com.
mzmedia.com.
.com. Right.
All right.
They also loved the lavender was in bloom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely loved. I've never seen so many monarch butterflies this year.
Great. I have seen a lot this year, too. So yeah. We're obviously, I think that the word is out there. People are leaving things like milkweed to grow.
Yep.
So the monarchs are able to actually lay their eggs, and those eggs are able to hatch. So I am seeing a lot this year.
Lovely, but shouldn't they start going down south?
Yeah, they'll be congregating. They have certain spots they congregate on the north side of Lake Ontario, and then the cloud of them all heads across. So where I've now moved to Prince Edward County, there is a spot, I can't remember what it's called, where, and it's soon, it's some like in the next week or so, where everybody kind of goes to watch this whole cavalcade of butterflies.
I think I mentioned before, a number of years ago, I got to be, I don't know, 12 years ago, my then wife, Di, and I were on a trip across Champlain Lake, Champlain Lake in New York. And right in the middle of the lake, we're on this wonderful boat, and all of a sudden, huge swarm of monarch butterflies heading down to Mexico.
Right.
Just unbelievable.
It's a beautiful sight.
Yeah, it sure is. Hey, thanks for telling us about that,
thanks
Teresa.
Thanks for calling, and let us know what that shrub is with dark pink flowers.
Do you live in Prince Edward County now, Charlie?
I do. I did move there.
Oh, my favorite place. We go there and get our wine.
There,
Everybody says that.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite place. Even the New York Times wrote a big article about how the center of the universe is now Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
Amazing.
A nice B&B where we stay once in a while.
There you go.
Oh, great.
Good to hear. Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you very much, Teresa. Well, here we are on Zoomer Radio AM 740 and, of course, 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto, reaching out to Etobicoke. And there's Sandra. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning.
Hello.
Oh, dear. Did I mess that up?
Oh, dear.
You still there? Hi, Sandra.
Okay,
sorry.
Sandra.
I pressed a button there. I probably shouldn't have.
No problem. Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Excellent.
I have a plant. I spelled it out to the person that answered the phone.
Yeah.
Solanum blue, or it's Solanum rantanelli.
Okay.
It comes from South America, and it grows like a small tree, and it has a really pretty purple flower with a yellow interior. Mm. It's used a lot in planters, and that's what I'm doing with it.
Yeah.
I overwinter it. I've done it now for 2 years, but I don't get any flowers.
Oh, that's weird.
It grows like crazy. I have to cut it back. In tons of leaves, so it does give some height in my planter. But I'm just wondering what I'm doing wrong about overwintering it. They say to cut it back to about two-thirds and then put it in a dark place. Now, I do get some light. I put it in a storage room, but it's a room that I do go into. So is the fact that I'm putting light on it during the winter?
No, that shouldn't affect it. So Solanum, or it's actually called, I'm back in my white rose days, we used to get these on occasion. It's a member of the potato family, just like tomatoes and potatoes and green peppers are all the same family. So it is a Solanum. It's often called a potato tree or a, cause it's, remember that potato family. It gets blue flowers with little white centers. And they're not huge flowers, but when flowering, they're
very
quite
pretty
showy.
And pretty, yeah.
It's
pretty, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the overwintering and forcing it to become semi-dormant, which is what you've been doing, is something where we commonly will do with any of the tropical plants, whether it's a hibiscus or an oleander or a mandevilla, these plants that we spend a lot of money on in the spring, we want to overwinter. So basement, semi-dormant, cool, dark, water once a month kind of thing, bring them back up in the spring. That's an option. If it's worked for you in the past, I would keep doing it. The other option, of course, is do not allow the dormancy thing. Keep it, if you have a nice bright sunny patio window, something super bright upstairs, and just bring it inside after washing it all off, get it into that sunny spot, and continue to treat it as a flowering houseplant.
No, often, I can't do that.
Yeah, if you don't have that space to do that, you can't. So instead, what I would do is do what you've been doing for the overwintering. In the spring, when it's time to get it outside or bring it upstairs and start the process to get it outside, what I would do is look closely at the soil. If it's looking very, very sort of inert and mm-hmm. tired, you may need to do a bit of soil replacement, if not an entire transplanting into a bigger pot. You will know whether there's roots growing out the bottom of the pot or not, but definitely get out some fertilizer, some flowering plant fertilizer. And at that point, do whatever pruning is going to make sense for the shape of the plant, because you want to do all your pruning in the spring and no pruning throughout the growing season. And that way, you should have flowers by, you know, late July, early August.
Okay, so I'm going to prune it then when I bring it out into the light. I bring it out gradually. I've
sort of right.
in low-level basement light, and then sure. I bring it up to brighter mm-hmm. light. Mm-hmm. I should give it the fertilizer then.
Well, wait until you start to see some active growth on the plant. Mm-hmm. So that will be, obviously, you'll be upstairs. I'm not sure how much light it's in when it comes upstairs. You may have to delay the fertilizer till you get it outside, where obviously it's in even more light. I think the point is we'll trim in the fall because it's easier to handle the plants when they're smaller than trimmed back, and we're just basically shutting them down for the winter, saying, you know, have a nice winter. Bringing them up in the spring is waking them up, so we're going to feed them, and that's when we would do secondary pruning to really concentrate on the shape of the plant and how it's going to grow.
So I should really be cutting it back quite a lot. Maybe I'm not cutting it back enough, because when it's actually outside growing and I put it in a very large planter so it mm-hmm. comes out of its pot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay.
I actually do have to cut it back because it's just totally out of
wow.
proportion with the rest of the planter.
Right. So that's my point, is do the regular cutting back that you do in the fall, as you have, mm-hmm. but next spring, when it's time to go out, or just prior to going out, don't hesitate to do some fairly hard cutting back. And you can even cut back roots if you need to at that time.
Okay, and that's what I've not been doing.
Yeah, and that'll be very stimulating to the plant. You're going to get a lot of new growth, and in the presence of the nutrients, you should get flowering.
I will try that this year.
Okay. Let us know how that works.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks
okay,
for calling.
Sandra, thanks for keeping in touch with us. We have bumped up to our next little break here, but we're coming back, and hey, isn't that kind of neat? I'm going to be checking in with Joe in London, Ontario, my hometown, where I'm heading tomorrow. So we'll say hi to Joe and see what he will be calling for as far as a weather forecast for me and the rest of the gang, too, here on Zoomer Radio.
Maybe he's an old schoolmate of yours, and you just don't remember him.
Oh, my God, you're probably right. Oh,
maybe. Never know.
Frankie's in trouble.
What's
again.
It called? Crumlin?
Crumlin Public School.
Crumlin. What a name.
Well, anyways. Yeah, Crumlin Airport. Yeah.
We'll come be on. Right
don't,
back.
Don't pick on my little Crumlin. Gee whiz.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Alrighty, Charlie, but before we head to London and Joe, you had a little something you wanted to ask.
Just wanted to go backwards to John, who phoned in from Oshawa.
Yep.
And he was wondering why his climbing hydrangea are not blooming
right.
and wondered if Epsom salts might be a good idea. And my answer to Joe is, great. there it is. So one of the recommendations on the Epsom Salt Council website is to use Epsom salts on plants like hydrangeas uh-huh. and evergreens and azaleas and rhododendrons at 1 tablespoon per 9 square feet. Mm-hmm. Apply over the root zone every 2 to 4 weeks during the growing season. So that would be May, June, July. Mm-hmm. So for those 3 months, every 2 to 4 weeks, 1 tablespoon per 9 square feet, just sprinkled over the root zone.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
There you go.
All righty. Well, that said, let us scoot off to, we'll lope along to London and say hi to Joe. Hey, Joe, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'll take that as an answer, too, for my, with the, what do you call it, the Epsom salt?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yep.
Even though the one you were referring it back to was John, but uh-huh. I'll take it.
Okay. Yep.
That's good.
Epsom salts are magical. Many people do use them in the garden. They are. Well, it can be very effective.
I appreciate that little piece of, but I know it wasn't meant for me, but there you go.
There you go. Okay.
Frankie, I've got this a stupid question. pertaining to gardens, naturally, because I've caught three skunks underneath my back porch.
Right. Yeah.
Now, can you tell me is there in a family? It would have been a family.
Yeah, it would have been a nest where babies were born back up 2 months ago, probably.
2 months? What kind of... am I looking for? Is there still some more under there?
Well, so you've been trapping and driving them away, have you, or what have you been doing?
I've been trapping them and driving them away to the country.
Right.
Putting them outside of Kremlin.
Yeah.
I'm just joking, Jeff.
I love it. That's perfect.
Yeah, I'm just putting them out.
Frank's going there today. And he's got a good skunk story that I've heard before, too.
Oh, yeah.
That probably was in London. Okay, so I'm not a skunk expert, but generally speaking, a nest or a litter of skunks is going to be between, two, three, four, really, would be probably very average in terms of the number of babies born.
Yeah.
They will have been grown up enough now that they are out wandering about.
Okay.
We had somebody in my neighborhood back in Richmond Hill a couple of years ago allow that exact same thing to happen.
Yeah.
Somebody, there was access to under the deck.
Yeah.
Mummy skunk laid the, had the babies and was raising them. And the baby skunks are not nocturnal the way adults are. So the babies will go wandering around in the daytime.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the adults are very careful to not go out in the daytime. They only go out at night. And I always remember I was sitting in the back patio, just, looking at my phone, not really paying attention to anything, and something came up and brushed against my leg. And of course, I got cats all over the place. So I reached down to pet the cat, and as I'm reaching down to pet the cat, I realize it's a skunk.
Oh, man. Were you full grown?
No, it's a baby skunk.
Baby. Oh, yeah.
They're so pretty.
They are. They're cute. I just wanted to pick it up. I just wanted to cuddle it. Yeah, it's very sweet.
The coats are so pretty.
Yeah.
I was very hesitant. Well, I didn't know. Now I'm glad to get rid of them.
Yeah, the best thing is to close off that access for the future. So
that's what I've done. My last one was 3 o'clock this morning.
Oh.
I've been waiting up for him, and I hope it's my last. And I closed it off. And so if there is anything in there, they'll dig their way out.
Yes, they will. They'll move things. Yeah. But do make it permanently shut off so that next spring there's no babies being born under there.
And you want to believe it.
And look, I thought you were going to say you had problems with skunks like digging up your garden, because this is the time of year skunks will start digging up our lawns to eat the grubs.
How many would be under the...
usually there are four or five, little guys.
So,
bless your heart, Joe, for taking them out of town and not
to Kremlin.
Not right to Kremlin.
Okay.
Have a good one, pal.
I'm going to call the mayor of Kremlin and give him a heads up on
what's going on here. Uh-huh. We have online from Coburg, Flora, a lovely name.
Nice, yeah.
The fauna and flora of the show. Hey, good morning, Flora.
Good morning. How are you, Charlie, and everybody? Help.
Good morning. Good.
I have a question. I'm a gardener, but a friend of mine cut down a maple tree, excuse me, and I dug up the stump, and I crumbled it as much as I can to make it look like wood chips, and I put it around my cedar hedge. Now, the cedar hedge, it's gorgeous. It has maple leaves. Will those grow into trees?
Okay, so they're little maple seedlings, little sprouts growing out of the ground?
Yeah, leaves, maple leaves.
Yeah, but the leaves
grow into trees.
Well, are they? I assume the leaves are attached to stems, to branches of some kind. They're growing. They're not. The leaves aren't just sitting on the ground. These are actually leaves that are
around a cedar hedge.
Maple keys will fly through the air and they can land anywhere and grow anywhere. And it's a very rare hedge that I see in my daily life that hasn't been invaded by something else, like some maple seedlings growing up inside a cedar hedge, or elm is a big one too. You'll just ash, you'll get all kinds of crazy things. So yes, if you've got green maple leaves growing where you don't want them, in the hedge, for example, get on your gloves, get in there. Did you get some rain in your area last night like we did?
Yes. I've done it for like maybe 2 years.
Okay. Yeah.
And around my cedar hedge, it has maple leaves.
Okay.
It's beautiful. This my
idea was not to pull weeds every year.
Right.
It looks nice, beautiful.
Okay, well, I mean, the option is you can leave the maple and the cedar growing together. And as the hedge is being trimmed, you'll just have that evergreen and maple leaf texture going on. Sometimes people will do that as well. But usually a hedge is one plant only, one species only. So it would be just the going in and digging out the maples that you don't want in the hedge, thus allowing the cedar to be even bigger and better and juicier and fatter.
Mm-hmm. But it looks beautiful. This way it hides the weeds.
Yeah, there's that too.
Unless you want to come and do it for me.
No. Some people would consider those
good luck with that.
Maples weeds.
Okay, great. So
thanks,
they won't
Flora.
Grow into trees.
They, well, if you keep trimming the hedge, you will control the maples from becoming trees. If you stop trimming the hedge, they will turn into trees.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Flora.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
You know, I just glanced out the window. Holy mackerel, what happened to that blue sky that was here earlier? It's very cloudy indeed.
Well, I know it was cloudy up north, so this coming down, I guess, from the north. But
Well, we'll deal with that a little bit later on, about 10 minutes from now, when you and I step across the street, have a little break.
We're running across. I'm so hungry.
I'm surprised you can't hear my stomach rumbling right now.
I can't, because mine's rumbling too loud.
We have to take our final break here and then come back and go... let's see. I'll get on a moped to Mount Forest to say hi to Carol.
We're going to have to get you a list of silly puns.
I know. Back in a moment here on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And the sous chef of the garden, Franklin Proctor, here saying hi to Carol in Mount Forest. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Welcome to the dynamic duo. question about onions. When I grow my onions in the garden, each year there seems to be some, not a lot, but some that have kind of what I'm going to call a root rot happening. I don't see an insect. I don't see a bug. I don't see anything, but you'll see the leaves, quote, the leaves of the onion will kind of turn white. And when you give them a gentle pull, there's no resistance because there's no roots. And when you pull them out, they're rotten. What's happening and what can I do to prevent it organically?
I think what you have going on is a very nefarious insect called an onion maggot. And they are in the soil. And they are chewing on your onions, which is why you see the leaves start to turn yellow. And when you go to pull that dying out seedling, it leaves behind some of that mushiness that the maggot's been chewing on, and that maggot finishes that up and then moves to the next onion down the row.
Dirty little devils.
Yeah, and there's three generations a year. This is a very, very happy insect that does lots of damage to the commercial onion growers who have to use strong pesticides to control.
Right.
And there are also some biological controls. There are even some traps that the commercial growers will use to control onion maggots. The best thing for the hobby gardener to do, particularly, from an organic perspective, two things. One is make sure in the fall, when you're digging your onions out, you get every single onion out of the ground.
Right.
Because by removing every single onion, you remove the food that the maggots will want to eat to overwinter in your soil to be there next spring. So be really, really, really careful, like good garden hygiene all the way, right?
Yep.
Sanitary, get every bit of onion out of there. Get it right off the property. If you're not eating those onions, get them off the property. And then in the spring, of course, you're going to make sure you're rotating your crops, obviously. Go to a new spot, well-drained soil. And then I would probably consider something called a row cover. That's like a cheesecloth cover when they start to grow. Because, of course, if you can move to a spot where there's no maggots in the soil, then it's the little flies flying around you're going to try and protect your growing onions from.
Okay, so they fly in.
They do.
Okay.
So they pass the winter in the dormant stage under the soil.
Okay.
And then the problem is in the spring, they start to hatch out of these, basically emerge from the pupa, and they start flying around. So it's not a very pretty plant. It's like a little flying insect, but it's going to infect your onions.
Right.
Okay. So late May, early June, you're going to want to get those your onions covered with what we call floating row covers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to prevent them from flying in.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. And a thank you to Werner for the recipe. Recipe. But I now I've got another problem. The tomatoes are so good. The tomato worm is decimating them from the top down.
Oh, those hornworms.
So yeah. Oh, man. I've picked off. I'll bet you 20 of them.
Wow. Wow,
they were just
that's a crop.
Thick.
Yeah, you so, almost want to fry those up and make a dinner out of them. They're so big.
I don't think so. From the blight from the bottom up and the tomato worms from the bottom, from top, the top down, it was not a good year.
Wow. Oh, gee whiz.
Well, good recipe from Werner, though, which is great to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. We have time. Ultra quickly. Mm. Lori in Cambridge. Good morning.
Hi. I have milkweed, and there's still some worms. Like, I would like to chop them down, and I was wondering when to do that. But there's still some little caterpillars on them. Like, I know it's not the black, white, and yellow. They're shorter and black and fuzzy with gold on them.
Oh, yeah, you can chop those down, those milkweed. I don't know what they're doing there, actually, because they wouldn't even be eating the milkweed. They're just hanging out, I think.
Oh, okay. So what are those caterpillars for?
Those are those little fuzzy bears. Remember? They're like the woolly bears, I think they call them. Uh-huh. And there's all kinds of great anecdotes about the size of the woolly bears and the thickness, the length of their fur indicates what kind of a winter we're going to have, right?
What
the
do they
predictors.
Become?
Pardon?
What do they become?
They will become moths, I believe.
Oh, I see.
Not butterflies.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, don't worry about them. And, yeah, if you want to cut down the milkweed, go for it. You're fine to do that. Make sure you do allow some to go to seed or put some pods aside so that you can have some milkweed next year as well.
Well, they don't regenerate?
No, that's from seed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
All righty. You know what? We are fresh at a racetrack here.
I know. How does that happen?
Yeah. 45 seconds left in the show. Because the guys, the Dave's Corner Garage Gang, they're getting their engines revved up next door here.
You know it. And I just keep giggling under my breath about you off to Crumlin.
Yes. I'm going to have a great time. I'll report to you next week.
I think you need to get on some kind of social media, right? Start a Crumlin feed.
Oh.
There you go.
All
right. Okay, just saying. So, all right, you're busy for the rest of the afternoon.
Yes,
you got
indeed.
Your shows, and then you're in the car and off you go.
You betcha. 1:30, I'll be back, and we'll have all sorts of fun. And I'm looking forward to Big Band Sunday night tomorrow night.
Yes.
Got a special show that... honest. In fact, we've got a sponsor, the Great Canadian Big Band Celebration.
Oh, nice.
More about that tomorrow.
Perfect. Good to hear. Thank you, Frank. Thanks, Duncan. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.